bust on over to fanexchange.com for a safe, easy, and reliable experience. A great experience. Tickets purchased on Fan Exchange are always guaranteed. There's no getting to the gate and then worrying about getting in. Fan Exchange gets you closer to the action. Find the very best seats at the best prices at fanexchange.com. Use the promo code ROME. Again, promo code ROME and get 50% off the service fees on your next purchase. Fan Exchange, we have tickets.
Guest host Damon Amendolara on CBS Sports Radio.
Pleasure with us, Damon Amendolara, DA in for Jim. You could usually catch me preceding Jim on many of these same CBS Sports Radio stations and, of course, the CBS Sports app, as well as the radio.com app and Apple Music. So listen to us all here on CBS Sports Radio there. Also, we are simulcast in live sparkling Technicolor, courtesy of the TV magic at CBS Sports Network. So check us out there as well. The Jim Rome Show every single weekday. We come to you live from the Quicken Loans Studios, national mortgage lender. Quicken Loans, apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. Coming up this hour on the show, in about 15 minutes from now, why would you steal a baby shark from an aquarium? Also, more hard-hitting news later on in the hour. Aeneas Williams will join us, NFL Hall of Famer. This weekend is Hall of Fame induction weekend. Of course, T.O. won't be there. That's big news. But I want to ask Aeneas about some of the guys that are going in this year because they are contemporaries of Aeneas, and also get his thoughts on T.O.'s departure from the norm of not being there for his induction. That's coming up this hour on the show. As always, you can get at us on the phones. Our New York City studio line is 855-212-4CBS, 855-212-4227, or on Twitter, DA on CBS. Oof, boy. The Houston Astros have just taken a major risk here. The Astros are the defending World Series champs, of course. The Astros are one of the best teams in baseball yet again. The Astros are part of that triumvirate of powerhouse teams of the American League that look like they could all win a World Series. Yankees, Red Sox, Astros. The closer role has been a debacle this year. The trust in Ken Giles is at an all-time low. And so the Astros officially said, we're not comfortable going into October with Giles as our closer, so let's do something else, which Astros fans, I'm sure, could understand, and plenty of baseball fans could understand as well. The one thing I think it's hard, though, to stomach is that the Astros, who have been built on amazing chemistry, I mean, think about how well the guys fit together, how much they really like playing with one another, the addition of Carlos Beltran and what his veteran presence meant down the stretch last year. Same thing with Justin Verlander. The fact that these guys really seem to love one another, that even a sabermetric, deep analytic franchise like the Astros started to look outside the mere numbers and said, let's look at the effect of veteran leadership, chemistry, fit. How can we quantify that? And they found ways to do that. They found ways to quantify it. And this year, they're rolling again. 26 games over 500, running away with the division, and will be in the playoffs yet again with a good chance at repeating. And they have risked all of that chemistry stuff for a new closer. Jeff Luhnow, the general manager of the Astros, has traded for Roberto Osuna from the Blue Jays. Osuna serving a 75-game suspension, which is pretty heavy, for a domestic assault, arrested and charged with domestic assault against his girlfriend. And according to Jeff Passan, friend of the Jim Rome Show and smack offer, he says that people within baseball have been talking incessantly about the brutality that the information is behind the scenes of what Osuna did to his girlfriend. That's one of the ugliest things that the Toronto police have ever investigated. And that everybody in baseball knows just how brutal, just how ugly, just how grotesque the actions were, the evidence is behind closed doors about this case. Lunell, though, is throwing out chemistry because he's got a talented closer that he could come in and swap out of Ken Giles, despite two of his pitchers who are leaders of the team being outspoken against domestic violence. Justin Verlander and Lance McCullers both trashing a previous Astros prospect who was released because of that ridiculously gross video of that prospect hitting his girlfriend in the stairwell of one of their minor league complexes. So here is Justin Verlander telling a former prospect within the organization, "Bleep you, man," on Twitter. "I hope the rest of your life without baseball is horrible. You deserve all that is coming your way." McCullers saying is, "The issue is that nobody cared as much until a video was leaked and now everybody is outraged. This is the reality of domestic violence. It's always brutal, always sickening. We must fight for the victims, video or not. He should be in jail. If you need help, find it. People care." So two leaders within the organization speaking out vociferously against domestic violence and domestic assault. And here is the Astros trading for a guy that has 75 games of a suspension for domestic assault.
"He's one of the elite relievers in our game. He has incredible command of multiple pitches. He can shut down the middle of the order of any offense in baseball. And we're hopeful that he will continue to have a ton of success on the field here in Houston."
When asked about what made them comfortable trading for a guy who has this trial and has this suspension or has this case, Lunell said, "Well, I can't get into specifics because the outcome of the litigation is still pending." But did say we have a zero tolerance policy in this organization. Well, how does that work? Zero tolerance, but the guy's been arrested for domestic assault. How does that work? That's not really zero, is it? Lunell said, "Well, we have a zero tolerance policy, but also an opportunity to give people second chances when they made mistakes in other organizations. That's how we put those two things together." That's the best you got? That's the best you got, man. You're the brain trust behind a guy. You're the brain trust behind a team and the guy behind an organization that has very skillfully put together a wonderful roster that fits together wonderfully and ends up winning its first World Series in organizational history. And the best thing you could come up with, even though you have tracked and you have staffed your organization full of really smart people that use analytics and data all the time, the best you can come up with is, "Well, we've got zero tolerance, but we give second chances if it happens in a different organization." That makes no sense. Then it's not zero tolerance. So if Roberto Osuna did this as an Astro, he can't be an Astro. But if he did this as a Blue Jay, he could be an Astro. He gets a second chance. That makes no sense. Just don't say you're zero tolerance. And this is the problem in professional sports in general, and this is the problem in the NCAA, is that I think most men, not all, but most men have their hearts in the right place. We certainly don't advocate violence against women. Most men believe that it's a problem. Most men have little leash or understanding or patience for a guy that does something that grotesque. I think largely people have their hearts in the right place. But in action, they just keep rationalizing. I mean, of course, if it happened to their wives or their daughters or their sisters, it'd be zero tolerance. But if it happens to somebody else's wife or somebody else's sister or somebody else's daughter, well, we like to give second chances. And this is not just Lunell. This is across professional sports. Teams keep saying, "Oh, no, no, we are anti-domestic violence, anti-domestic assault. We are coming out strongly. There's no room for this." And I think largely they believe that. But if it helps them win games where there is so much pressure to do so and a lot of money attached to doing so, oh, they rationalize the hell out of it. We've got a zero tolerance policy on domestic violence. unless it happens in a different organization. What kind of explanation is that? One strike policy here with the Astros. Two if it happens somewhere else. What? And so the Astros, led by Justin Verlander, Lance McCullers, and others, are probably going to have a tough time right off the bat trying to explain away having a guy that has this rap sheet or this arrest on his resume to try to come in there and try to win a World Series. Now, maybe Luhnow doesn't matter. Maybe he doesn't care, rather. Maybe it doesn't matter to him as long as he wins a World Series. And maybe ultimately that's all he's thinking. Yeah, the guys won't be happy right now, but they're getting a great closer. We need a closer. And we are now set up better for October than ever. And Osuna's probably scared straight. He knows he doesn't have much more options in baseball if it happens again. 75-game suspension has got to have scared him straight, and we're going to get the better part of this. But the Astros are risking their chemistry in a big way, because what happens if Roberto Osuna blows a couple of saves and Verlander is the starter? What happens if Osuna is not a lights-out closer? How much patience, how much leash, how much understanding does his teammates give him, knowing that they're already swallowing something they don't want to swallow? And that is bringing in a guy arrested for domestic violence. And that the team was all about tight-knit chemistry, and now they are pushing a guy into that chemistry that clearly has built-in resentment towards him already. Boy, this is a big risk. And boy, they are compromising a lot of what they had already built to bring in Osuna. 855-212-4CBS, the phone number. That's the New York City studios, 855-212-4CBS. Matt's next up in Los Angeles. What's up, Matt?
Hey, from New York to New Delhi, from Boston to Baghdad, baby. CBS Sports Network in the house. The Matt in L.A. montage is treating all of your corneas to pleasantry from the West Coast. The most feared DA, not in a courtroom or lying in a Cardinals uni about throwing INTs and smiling. My man, DA, how the hell are you?
I'm doing good, brother. How you doing?
Hey, fabulous, man. I'm in L.A. The sun is shining. The Dodgers got Manny Machado. But that's not why I called, brother. You can take the Expos out of Montreal, but you can't take the Expos out of D.C. or the underachieving, front office bumbling, mismanaging of aces leading to playoff early exits, etc., etc. Who the hell keeps Bag Harper on this sinking ship that is the Expos, allowing him to walk for nothing at the end of the year instead of making a deal? I'll tell you who. That chump Rizzo, the same guy that saved Strasburg for nothing, which would be an eventual first-round flop instead of getting the stud going and putting him into September, making him earn his damn wages. Hey, if D.C. has any stones, they get rid of Rizzo. The Lizard should have never been let go after a playoff run. He had that team on the right track. It's just stupidity, man, what's going out down in D.C. That's all I got, D.A. Hey, keep up the good work. We're the CBS Sports Network with the jungle on lock. Smack off 24, baby. Outro.
Well done, Matt. Nicely done. You can take the Expos out of Montreal. You can't take the Expos out of the Nationals. That's pretty good. Man, if I'm the Nats, I'm selling on Bryce Harper right now. I'm getting what I can back in return, and I'm hoping I can re-sign him in the offseason. But this season's going nowhere, and holding on to the carcass of the 2018 Nats is a mistake. When we come back, have you ever gone to an aquarium and thought, man, I'd like to take that shark home with me? D.A. Damon Amendolari in for Jim today here on CBS Sports Radio and the CBS Sports Network. Minutes past the hour. Damon Amendolari, D.A. in for Jim. Thanks for joining us. You could usually catch my show preceding Jim's here on CBS Sports Radio. As always, the Jim Rome Show is simulcast on TV, so check us out there on the CBS Sports Network. Coming up, Aeneas Williams will join us, NFL Hall of Famer, in approximately 18 minutes from now. We'll talk to him about Hall of Fame weekend. Some of his contemporaries and peers getting into the Hall of Fame as he did. And T.O. saying thanks, but no thanks. Or actually, I don't really think that T.O. ever said thank you. You know, there are just some stories that capture the American imagination for obvious reasons. It's usually things that we can relate to. Things that you say, yeah, that could be me. Something that hits you in your core. Something that inflames your spirit or captures your imagination. And today, that story is a shark was stolen from the San Antonio Aquarium. Man. How often have we all been there, going to an aquarium, checking out sea creatures, looking at one and saying, I wish I could take that home with me. A shark named Helen was disguised as a baby and stolen from an aquarium in a stroller. I cannot make it up, boys and girls. I cannot make this up. So, at the San Antonio Aquarium, three thieves walk into the San Antonio Aquarium. This is the start of a very funny joke, I think. Three thieves walk into the San Antonio Aquarium, and they see a small shark in one of those petting tanks. It's a gray horn shark, smaller than 2 feet. And they go, you know what? We need that shark, yo. Got to get that baby shark. You know, you've gone to an aquarium. You've gone to a fish store, let's say. Been like, oh, man, I really want that fish. That fish is bright and colorful and cool. It's got a cool fin. It's got cool stripes. Got cool spots. I want that fish. We've all been there. You go to the pound. Oh, my God, I want that puppy. I want that kitten. I want that dog. Well, these three guys just said, I want that shark. So their plan on stealing the shark is, okay, one guy's got the stroller, the other guy's got the blanket, and one guy picks up the shark. This is all caught on surveillance film. So this one dude goes into the tank, grabs the gray horn shark named Helen. He quickly turns around and kind of runs or quickly, briskly walks back to where another one of the thieves are. He quickly swaddles the shark in a blankie. Kind of reminiscent of how E.T. was smuggled in and out of the tent. You know, you got to put like the hoodie on him. Otherwise, he looks like, you know, an alien. But as long as he's wearing that hoodie, who knows? Just as like a really short kid. And then the third guy's got the getaway car, or in this case, the stroller. And they quickly lower the shark with the swaddle blanket into the stroller and then push it away. There's only one problem. That stroller is dripping salt water the whole way. Which is, I don't know about you, but kind of rare to see babies in strollers or toddlers just pouring seawater behind them. So, the suspects get it outside and try to put it into the car. But at that point in time, the aquarium's on to them. And the guys, with a distinctive van and tips from others who say, hey, I saw that van and they look like they were putting something drippy in that van, are eventually caught. Isn't it always the weird van? It's always the guys in the weird van. You can't ever trust the guys in the weird van because they're always doing something, because if they were not doing something weird, they wouldn't have the van. The van is always to hide weird things happening in the van. It's definitely not like, and the three thieves put the little gray shark inside the Toyota Corolla. It's never that. It's always the weird van guys. Apparently, they staked out the tank for more than an hour. and said, okay, now. And my biggest question is, how much did they think they were going to sell this shark on the black market for? Were they going to make much more of a profit than the admission for three guys to an aquarium? That's three adult admissions. That can't be cheap. Apparently, they thought they were going to sell this. At the end of the day, what does it say about these guys? Did they try to pull off an Ocean's 13 for a baby shark at the aquarium? Like, guys, you're not that good at this. Have higher dreams. You could only imagine these three dudes sitting around watching Ocean's 11 or something going, yeah, dude, we could do something like that, man. We could totally do something like that. We could, like, totally break down. We could totally beat the casino. Yeah, man, you're, like, super smart. No, you're super smart. You know, we're, like, seriously super smart. We should totally try to take down a casino. All right, but we got to drive the van to Vegas then. Yeah, I don't think the van's getting to Vegas. All right. There's no AC in the van, so we can't take it all the way to Vegas. But, like, we could totally take down one of the banks here in town. Yeah, man, one of the banks. You saw Batman, right? You saw the Joker did it, right? No, you know, it'd be really cool. Get one of those sharks at the aquarium, man. And scene. I'm just glad Miss Helen was captured or rescued, saved from these three buffoons. Because you could only imagine the shark going, what is going on? I was here in a nice little petting tank. I was getting fed all the time. People were really nice to me. I wasn't doing anything to anybody. And now suddenly I'm in a bucket and a stroller. Oh, no, the van too? No, I got van guys? It could even be a Beamer or something. I got stolen by the van guys. You know, some sharks eat people. Some sharks attack others. Some sharks do pretty mean things. This shark was doing nothing in the tank. This is the worst case of mistaken identity ever. He's like, I'm one of the good sharks. I wasn't doing anything. Van guys, no. No, van guys. But Miss Helen's okay. Miss Helen has been returned alive. She is back at the San Antonio Aquarium, thankfully, where she belongs. And van guys, they're still van guys, but now with a rap sheet. 855-212-4CBS. Twitter, DA on CBS. Baby Shark DA, I prefer the more mature one. Signed, Jim McElwain. From Canadian Hitman. I would have liked to see that. The three van guys take pictures with a baby shark lying on some type of boat like Jim McElwain's impersonator. The McElwain guy. When we return, let's talk NFL Hall of Fame with the Hall of Famer himself, former shutdown cornerback Aeneas Williams. Next, D.A. Damon Amendolara in for Jim today here on CBS Sports Radio and simulcast the CBS Sports Network. And Rich Smackerman.
Live from New York, this is the Jim Rome Show with guest host Damon Amendolara on CBS Sports Radio.
39 minutes past the hour. Thanks for being with us. DA in for Jim today. Always a thrill to host this show, a show that I grew up listening to and have listened to for decades now. So this is really, really cool as always. And coming up, two great guests we'll talk football with. Max Starks, two-time Super Bowl winner with the Pittsburgh Steelers, coming up at the top of the hour. And it is Pro Football Hall of Fame weekend. And of course, T.O., deciding not to be part of the festivities, which to me is very T.O.-esque. I understand the people that say the numbers were there for T.O. to be a first ballot Hall of Famer. They made him wait, so they screwed him, and he can say screw you. But you have to realize it's a vicious cycle. T.O. did not get in despite being first ballot worthy based on his numbers because from a chemistry issue, he broke teams apart internally. And so if he was a negative there and the voters considered that and then didn't put him in earlier, then he is now saying, well, screw you. And that cycle goes round and round for T.O. over the course of his career. Our next guest is an 8-time Pro Bowler, a former All-Pro first teamer as well. He was a member of the 1990s All-Decade team. He was a member of the Rams 10th anniversary team. He's in the Cardinals Ring of Honor. He's one of the best cornerbacks of his generation, and he was in the Hall of Fame, got into the Hall of Fame a couple of years ago. Our friend Aeneas Williams joining us today here on the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio. Aeneas, how you doing, man?
I am doing fantastic, D.A. Glad to be on with you, and please tell Jim I said hello.
Absolutely will do, man. It's always wonderful to catch up with you. And let's go back to when you got that call. You were a finalist a couple of times but didn't get voted in. You finally get voted in. Was there any resentment or frustration that you had personally that you were not in earlier?
Not at all. A lot of this has to do with the perspective. It's probably about this, including this class, not all players that are in the Hall of Fame is close to over a little less than 320, I think. And that's not all players. So the number that are called and be a part of that elite group is amazing and truly a blessing. And the other part, D.A., you're talking about a guy who walked on at Southern University my junior year in college a week before the season started. So I was grateful for my number to be called and to be among the elite that have ever played the game.
You always had great perspective on your career and the people playing around you and your place in the game because of that. And so was it somewhat overwhelming to finally get that call and basically be told, now you live forever, now you're an NFL immortal because you're in the Hall of Fame?
Well, it really turned out to be one of the things that I set as a goal. But really, it's kind of like the Hall of Fame is a part. It happens because the playing is already done. It's nothing you can do. It's now, how did you play when you played the game? What did your peers think? Did your peers have the respect for you? And then the selection committee, did you do enough things that impacted the game where years later there's enough people that would be willing to be in that room, talk about your career, and be able to help others see from statistics as well as how you played the game that this honor is deserving.
So we have this story that's been swirling around this year's class around T.O., and T.O.'s not going to be in Canton. How do you feel about T.O. saying, I don't want to be part of the actual event?
I just hate that he's going to miss it. Obviously, he has his own personal preference for whatever reason. I just would have loved to encourage Terrell to come and experience this with your family, with your friends. And I just hope he does not years later, because as you get older, you just begin to think about things in a different way. I just hate he's going to miss this moment. And the first time that you're there being inducted, it's no other time like that.
Do you think down the road, 10 years, 20 years from now, that he'll regret that he made this decision out of emotion earlier in his career?
Yeah, if he's made it in spite of other people or as a reaction, a lot of times as you get older, you just get a different perspective. You realize some of the things that you thought were extremely important or disrespect, you just look back and you think about it, you overlook some things. It's kind of like there's a proverb that says love overlooks insult. Sometimes when you perceive things are an insult, it goes back to the perspective. He's one of the best that have ever played the game. He's one of the best I've ever played against. That won't change because he gets in instead of the first time he's gotten in. Is this the third time?
Yes.
Yes, it's the third time. But as I said, you can't take away what he's already done from him. I'm just glad to see he and Randy Moss get in, so my teammate Isaac Bruce will be right behind them.
Aeneas Williams joins us, Pro Football Hall of Famer, class of 2014, here on the Jim Rome Show. Let me ask you about trying to defend these guys. You played cornerback and defensive back in the NFC for a long time, more than a decade. That was during the peak of T.O. and Randy Moss's careers, and Moss is coming in with this class as well. What was it like to try to defend the secondary, T.O. and or Randy Moss?
That was the awesome thing, that guys like Terrell and Randy, they helped bring out the best in me. They brought out the best in me. They also challenged me to overcome fears. You know, the fears of playing against Randy was 6'4", Terrell is 6'2", 6'3". They were much bigger than I was, but the ability to compete. And as I tell today's current players, respect is not demanded, it's commanded by how you play the game, and that's what I enjoy playing against those guys.
Well, that's interesting to use the word fear. What did you fear about competing against Randy Moss, and how did that materialize?
It wasn't so much just Randy. It was a long time. I wasn't sure if I could play in the National Football League. It started with going into my fourth year when Coach Buddy Ryan got the job in Arizona. He hired his two boys, Rex and Rob, and Rob was my defensive back coach. And I was voted my rookie year NFC Defensive Rookie of the Year. But now going into that fourth season, I was a restricted free agent, and I wasn't sure I wanted to go back and sign back with the Cardinals because Coach Buddy had gotten a job. My wife and I were living in Champaign. She was getting her MBA, and I told her, I don't know if I want to go back to Arizona. And she said, why? I said, because Coach Buddy Ryan got the job. And she said, what's wrong with that? I said, well, I don't know if he's a player's coach. But the truth was, had nothing to do with Coach Buddy Ryan not being a player's coach, because he was. But how wives tend to do, they continue to ask you questions, or probing questions. And I had to admit to her, because I played in pretty much Fritz Schirmer's, a mix of man and zone system, I knew Buddy Ryan's system would put the cornerback on the island with the top receiver, or at least on the left side. I didn't know if I could do it. And that's where the fear and the hesitation to even sign back with the Cardinals. But when I signed back, my wife and I finally agreed that we believed we were supposed to go back to Arizona. Soon as we signed, Rob Ryan, my defensive back coach, first year as a pro coach, he put his arms around me during the offseason, and he says, Aeneas, you can lead this league in interceptions. You can make the Pro Bowl. You can be all pro. And he said, I saw you lead the country in interceptions your senior year at Southern with 11 interceptions. And Rob convinced Buddy to put me on the best receiver. And that is the first year, D.A., I led the league in interceptions, made all pro, and made the Pro Bowl.
Wow, that's a great story. And so you're placed on your own island in the Cardinals defense, and you're playing the Niners twice a year in the NFC West. Is it basically Niners week? You'll be locked on T.O. and you know it from Monday on?
The whole defense gets the game plan. I get the big overall game plan, and then I get my assignment, which is Terrell. Everywhere he goes, I have to go. And here's the unique thing. What Rex did with Darrell, it was Rex copying what Rob did with me. And Darrell being so outstanding, being able to cover the best guy. So if Terrell went to the restroom, yeah, I had to go to the restroom with him. And here's the other unique thing. When it comes down to a shutdown corner, some corners prefer to be on the best. They will be on the best receiver, but not necessarily if that best receiver goes in a slot. That's one of the unique things about what I did. If I was on the best receiver, no matter where they were, if they were in a slot, I would have to go there with them. So I don't know if you remember a few years back, maybe about 2 years, when Josh Norman got that big contract with Washington. And the big deal was, why didn't Washington put him solely wherever Antonio Brown went? Why was he not covering him? Well, part of that is, no matter how good that player is, you have to make sure he's comfortable moving around in a different slot on the outside, wherever that guy goes, because if he's not, you put the player and the defense at a disadvantage if you move him completely around like that, even though he can do it.
Hmm. Aeneas Williams joins us today here on the show. It's NFL Hall of Famer week, and so we've got the Hall of Fame game and then the induction this weekend. What'd you think about Ray Lewis's ability to be a defensive leader? Obviously, you guys were contemporaries. What'd you think about Ray Lewis and how he kind of galvanized that Ravens defense and really defined it for so long?
We've had so many guys. When I think of Ray, I think of Mike Singletary. And obviously, Mike is not as vocal, even though he's vocal on the field. But Ray, guys like that, I always thought the middle linebacker typically set the tone for the defense. And I could tell you, one of the guys who I'm hoping at some point gets some kind of recognition, I'll get back to Ray, and that's my former teammate in St. Louis, who I thought is one of the best that have ever played, London Fletcher. Because even though I got to St. Louis and people said I helped turn around their defense, it was the leadership of London Fletcher and his play that set the tone for the entire defense. With Ray Lewis, not only did he set the tone for the defense, he set the tone for his entire team with his spirit. It's one thing being able to dominate athletically, intellectually on the field, but when you have a player of his caliber where his spirit influences the entire team, that's what I think about. And really the entire organization, that's what I think about with Ray. And the other part is his ability to overcome the challenges off the field that he went through early in his career and be able to be mentored by Mike Singletary and really just become just an outstanding citizen and player. Those are things that I love to see about the players as they mature.
How about the same thing that can be said for Brian Dawkins? You guys were contemporaries in the NFC, obviously leaders on your defense. Dawkins also was such an emotional leader and a spirit for his defense of the Eagles franchise as well. Did you see some similarities between how Ray led and how Brian Dawkins led?
Absolutely. Once again, Dawkins, you talk to the guys that play with him and then playing against him, knowing he set the tone. You always had to know where Dawkins was. And as I said, once you become a part of the 1% of high school players that play the National Football League, everybody's talented. But when you have those unique guys whose spirit oozes out of them where it becomes contagious and adds confidence to all of their teammates on both sides of the ball, certainly that was Brian Dawkins.
It's a really good class, isn't it? You've got not only T.O. and Randy Moss, two of the best wideouts ever, but Ray Lewis, Brian Urlacher, and Brian Dawkins, three tremendous emotional defensive leaders. This is a really cool class, especially for your generation of guys, isn't it?
It is, and just Brian Urlacher, can you imagine this guy actually caught punts while in college? It's crazy. This is the kind of athlete you have, and for him to be able to do what he did to go from, I want to say he played safety in college, and to be one of the best middle linebackers and roam the field the way he did, you're exactly right, D.A. This is certainly one of the best classes that have ever gone into the Pro Football Hall of Fame.
Aeneas Williams is a Pro Football Hall of Famer, all-decade team of the 1990s as well, Pro Bowler, first-team All-Pro, and a member of Canton with that bronze bust in Canton that the rest of those guys will get this weekend. And, yes, I always love picking your brain on NFL history and your time in the league and your career. Thanks so much for the perspective, man. It's always a total thrill, a total rush. And we'll do it again here soon, bud.
It's an honor. Thank you, D.A. Great interview. And please, again, tell Jim Rome I said hello and keep up the great work.
Will do, bud. Thanks so much. Aeneas Williams joining us here on the show. Total class act. And as somebody that really loves the history of the NFL, you may have seen me at times doing a lot of historical bits for the NFL Top 10 series on NFL Network done by NFL Films. I just love picking the brains of guys like that, like Aeneas, and seeing the guys that will go in this year for the Pro Football Hall of Fame. It is an amazing class. These are kind of franchise faces. Dawkins, Urlacher, Ray Lewis. Obviously, Randy and T.O. bounced around quite a bit. But two of the most gifted, most dynamic wide receivers of all time. This is a pretty cool class. Add Jerry Kramer that finally got in, which is an amazing story. Bobby Bethard as well, the architect of so many great teams. And this is a really wonderful NFL Hall of Fame class. When we come back, Super Bowl champion twice, Max Starks on the NFL. D.A. in for Jim Rome today.